interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude-Busting Episode BTWRLM 559. We got to get right to this right away. So much stuff to do. I'm not going to be able to hit all the news I was planning on, like, as usual. I leave a lot of players on the field just trying to get this thing through, just to give ourselves an opportunity to look around, maybe not be so afeared as they want to make us. Right off the bat, we got it seasonally now. A triple fraud threat pandemic, all the concerns now about it sweeping the United States, as we would plan to do, and, you know, concerns, as they say here, pandemic concerns that sweep the United States. Those concerns are business interests, correct? That's what's sweeping the United States. The business is beginning to cut a seasonal fat hog from the United States federal fear-mongering, executing the Smith-Mundt Act. Just changed it. They can just promote to you all they want. They don't tell you the truth anymore. Don't know why no one stepped up and changed that again, but they do that because the United States government was established for commerce and profit. That's what the AK, the regulating of commerce is about, and they get to do that through lies, lying to us now through for seasonal diseases, as they did in beginning this COVID swindle. The U.S. is navigating its first respiratory viral season since the pandemic, with an uptick in flu, COVID-19, and respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, cases. Now, media has raised the specter of a potential triple threat fraud epidemic. I'm adding the word fraud. I hope you understand that. They won't. So now already, if you look carefully what they said, the last bit of the paragraph of that sentence, they use the word epidemic. It's already in the story, just an epidemic, not a pandemic. As they stated in the title, that was quick, folks. Yeah, they moved this thing through. Remember, a pandemic is a foreign definition. It has nothing to do with the United States, and the federal government has nothing to do with declaring these outbreaks or epidemics. You notice they also jumped the outbreak part. If you've been listening to me and you've also been studying your law, you can follow all this fraud. The government perpetrated fraud on everybody. And they get everybody riled up because no one wants to take the simple time and energy just to go read the facts of it all. And then for themselves insist that the local public health agents or officials are doing the job, doing the duty under the law to confirm all these things. It's pretty amazing how they've gotten away with this. I don't even know. Progress in vaccine rollout last fall contrasts with the waning public trust, largely due to challenges in accessing RSV vaccines. And so right there, we have changed the whole story, and you start not hearing the flu anymore. They want to keep saying COVID, that's symptoms. Again, it's flu-like symptoms. So let us toss into the world word salad here in the mix, expanding that distrust to all government and functionaries on this is the prime concern. And we can read, however, COVID-19 related hospitalizations have surged since November. By mid-December 2023, the CDC reported a nationwide increase in flu cases, despite vaccinations falling short of 2022's total by 8 million. Despite? Did you hear that? Despite as a negative? Sort of suggests the vaccination caused the flu cases, doesn't it? CDC reported a nationwide increase in flu cases despite vaccination falling short in 2022 by a total of 8 million. Really? Despite? It's pretty fascinating right in there. The only evidence here is it's the seasonal flu, folks. And we're not talking COVID no more, are we? All of a sudden. These all are... include a lot of the respiratory difficulties that we see, as we've had seen in all of the descriptions regarding the COVID swindle. And remember, unless the CDC admitted to being able to test for their own bioweapon jab administration, there's nothing COVID-related that can non-fraudulently be demonstrated. Where am I getting that? Right out of the communicable disease law. Anybody could have seen this. I'm still believing I'm not. I might be the only one. I'm astonished on the feed I get through, or the lack of response through X or Twitter, It's amazing. And here, so remember, a serious seasonal influenza was on the increase about 3 years prior to the beginning of the Great COVID Swindle. Those flu numbers of which also disappeared, as I was able to identify and track those as they were going, and this was to the benefit of the COVID Swindle accounting fraud that was going on. Again, just a bunch of people just bought into it, didn't really look around ahead of time. And though, if you know that all that nonsense didn't, that serious influenza strain that was being reported literally 3 years before, increasing each year 3 years before 2022, that didn't disappear because they never treated it. They never worked on it. There's not like an influenza C vaccine if they worked. There's only still A and B. So though that didn't disappear, and it's working its way through, and it's unreported, and it's still working through the population, but that's the good news. The population is continuing fighting off this apparently very serious natural, if you will, influenza strain that they don't have a clue about. They're not going to report on it, and it was devastating underneath that they brought the COVID swindle up. So I just want to explain to you, there's things that are out there. We can be looking at the wrong thing, so take care of yourselves out there. This is a seasonal flu, influenza, or some derivation. They want to call the variant. This is a derivation of that influenza. It can kill you. And so good health to you, which is what we should really be promoting to everybody. But when you look at all the waning trust here is important. It's a good thing to hear. People are increasingly distrustful of government actors pretending to represent the interests of the people, but they do not, and otherwise they would follow the local communicable disease law. That's how quickly you can figure this out. You don't have to even understand the communicable disease law to know they're not following it. If you just read a few of their duties, just read for the words duties and the things they shall do and the things that shall happen and the organization of how it works. And the problem is that these are unarrested official criminals, and they won't let up on their fear campaign against those that don't have eyes to see or ears to hear and a discerning heart or mind. And this is the main problem I keep seeing. There's just the contrarians of us that won't look. There's those of us that look and see, and there's those that don't see at all. And if they do see, they don't see much. And it's really, it's hurting. It's killing people, actually. The COVID-19 hospitalizations, this report goes on, figures have risen since last November. Testing of domestic wastewater shows significantly increased viral concentrations in nearly 69% of locations. So we go back and look through that. You say rising since November indicates a seasonal influenza again, doesn't it? Right? And just like in 2019 in December when I read to you the reports of the increasing virulent influenza strain. And notice in that part here of the triple threat fraud campaign misrepresenting and the misrepresentation of this, they didn't even identify which or any viral constituent. Look at that last sentence. It just says viral concentrations. Yeah, apparently virus being a constituent can vote for equal representation too, and the bioweapon industry cohorts are willing to lobby for their constituent on their constituents' behalf, and these viruses are allowing them to make a lot of money. People just aren't paying attention. And even if there isn't a non-seasonal one, but a lipid protein venom that they invented that looks like just as good to an ostensible fearful public prodding and accepting, if not mindless people, afeared of nothing as of nothing that's being promoted. There's nothing there, and they believe that there is. And these lobbyists and these government agents and these industry just feed parasitically off of all that. And so when you see the word public in these public trusts, remember that's the government's trust. Public means government. It doesn't mean my listener whatsoever in any of this stuff. So we could keep reading. However, Marcus Plaskia, representing the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials, and remember, those are the 57 U.S. government federal states, folks, the 57 states which most laughed at when Obama started mentioning it. Remember what you read there. The state and territorial health are 57 federal states. We've been talking about this Lincolnization, the post-founding father era. This is what we're talking about here. There is 57 states. Not the states you think they are. the states of the United States, as we are now Lincolnized after the Civil War. Lucia acknowledged that many of the hospitals were re-implementing mask mandates, anticipating more such directives in the coming days, but as yet there is no widespread report of hospitals being overwhelmed by the surge in the respiratory cases. So remember, those are the two points, that they had to overwhelm the hospitals. That's what gave the courts a little bit of license to kind of look away. All the government had to do says our hospitals were overwhelmed. They didn't tell them it was all based in a fraud. And we don't even know that was the truth with all the dancing doctors. But anyway, the triple threat fraud here, folks, is only a potential that hadn't materialized. They actually agree. But like the struggle here, folks, the fraud is real. And you've been warned behind the woodshed. There's a lot of answers. I told you this is not going to go away. And they want to bring those masks back. You just have, for you, each one of my listeners needs to step up for themselves. That's how you're going to defy this. And remember, that was a gigantic global experiment we identified. We have one ongoing right now on the guinea pig death front. We have a U.S. judge who gives a go-ahead to an execution by a new method. The state of Alabama may now be put a convicted murderer to death using nitrogen gas, despite concerns voiced by U.N. experts. A federal judge in the United States, the U.S., has given the green light to that country's first ever execution using nitrogen gas, set to be carried out later this month in the state of Alabama. The convict's lawyers have argued that the state is planning to use their client as a test subject, and also cited the American Veterinary Medical Association 2020 recommendation that nitrogen hypoxia should not be used as a means of euthanizing mammals other than pigs, as it could create an toxic environment that is distressing for some species. Meanwhile, in a statement published last Wednesday, a panel of UN experts expressed concern that, quote, nitrogen hypoxia would result in a painful and humiliating death, close quote, noting that there is no scientific evidence of the proven to be proven otherwise there. During the hearing that preceded the decision, Alabama's Attorney General Steve Marshall's office argued that the novel method of execution would, quote, cause unconsciousness within seconds and cause death within minutes. In his ruling on Wednesday, U.S. District Court Judge R. Austin Huffaker refused to grant an injunction to stop Smith's execution, now scheduled for January 25th. So let's look at this. The U.N. experts aside, those are outside the government of the United States, the U.S. judiciary allowed and is allowing slow and painful deaths in the great Comey swindle. Lincoln's military veterinary protocols are in force for the human animal organs from pigs being acceptable here. I've talked about all this veterinary connection to the military with Comey swindle. And so when I look at that, I go, what is the problem actually with a state killing someone with an arguably quicker, painful method than the Comey swindle victims were U.S. citizens enjoying their equal rights, 42 U.S.C. 1981, to enjoy pains and punishment and wrongful extortions of every kind. And apparently, this bar member judge didn't see any difference either. And so we get what we get there. Interesting way to decide to kill people, but moving on. The boiling frog here, 34 trillion, excuse me. We have blown past that. $34 trillion national debt makes a U.S. boiling frog, J.P. Morgan warns, one of the big financial houses that'll be your MasterCard holder. $34 trillion, folks, it's a budget. Fascinating. Remember, that's just the budget. You look at the CAFR, you know, that's just a line item veto. They're not talking about the rest of the government and where all those funds go and what they're all doing. And we just might be fine, as Clint Richardson has exposed to us with his in-depth study of all that. According to the Congressional Budget Office's estimates, by the early 2030s, the U.S. expenditure on entitlements, mandatory initiatives, and debt obligations could surpass its total revenue, pushing it closer to a financial cliff edge. Now, I'd like to know, where is this government actually producing anything to have the revenue that we would think is income? Is all your work they're taking credit for? Quote, the problem of the U.S. is starting point, every round of fiscal stimulus brings the U.S. one step closer to the debt unsustainability, J.P. Morgan strategist Michael Cymbalest said. He noted that the market's apparent tolerance for deteriorating government finances, stressing that could shift at any moment. And so those of us in the United States, watch out. This is the cliff edge, and they're warning us, their bankers are warning us, that there may not be much of an escape the way it's being worked. And we also see the amount of money now going into war issues. We are finding out here war expenditures appear to violate the law as well here, but and which shouldn't even be in the budget, if you will, but not, as this story suggests, just Biden. The whole of Congress is also involved in this, not just Biden. The Uniparty and the Congress critters appropriating the money, the men and women of the Congress that are doing this. They're all involved, essentially violating U.S. law relative to Washington arms supplies to Israel. And the Biden administration transfers of arms to Israel amid the Gaza war violated U.S. domestic laws and policies that require the recipients of weapons must abide by international law, Human Rights Watch said in a report, World Report 2024. Why I've been focused on international law, there's nothing here that anybody's in Israel or their cohorts is actually following, and everybody gives lip service to it as the nations around it, as we watch this, the continuing, well, just an abhorrent condition in the world that I told you was after 2009 when the fraud was monetized. I said we're going to watch some horrendous things, and then this expected sideshow shows up when that report comes out. It's another story out of the land of the Uniparty. A hunter gets maced. The game warden sounded thoroughly prepared. The fiery exchange in the Congress. A GOP Republican accuses Hunter Biden of playing game with the law. The shocking showdown involved Representative Nancy Mace from South Carolina and unfolded as the hearing was due to address a contempt resolution against Hunter for not complying with an earlier subpoena. Within seconds of Hunter's arrival into the chamber, proceedings quickly escalated into a fiery exchange between lawmakers. Apparently it was a forest fire. Hunter Biden broke the law. He did so deliberately. You did so deliberately. You showed up on the Hill on the Senate side the day of that congressional subpoena to defy it and spit in the face of this committee. Why can't you show up for a congressional deposition? You're here for a political stunt. This is just a PR stunt to you. This is just a game you are playing with the American people. You're playing with the truth, stated Mace. The hearing became chaotic and multiple interruptions and attempts by the committee chaired James Comer to restore order. Amidst the commotion, Mace emphasized that the importance of equal application of the law, irrespective of one's family name, and suggested Hunter Biden should be arrested. The commander-in-chief's son ultimately departed the House committee meeting just as Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene took the floor. Not long after the chaotic scene broke out, the United States House Judiciary Committee cleared its own separate contempt resolution against Hunter, allowing it to proceed to the full House. The Oversight Committee's measure was given clearance shortly after the vote, 25-21. So we observe here the hunter fled the forest, home of the Congress critters, so it must have been the spray-type mace, not the medieval clubbing type that the representative used. The hearing here is likely center stage of the three-ring circus, and is reported to include that the vile liquid of liberal mace sprayed was, "You are the epitome of white privilege," she said. Fascinating. Not congressional. The upshot of all this is the people did not get benefit of any record, the hunter testifying before Congress critters, and the entire thing appears to be a political stunt, not just the one she saw. So this is all coming at the same time to, again, cause noise for anybody watching if we'll continue to pay attention. Normally I don't talk about this stuff, but I think it's important to watch now this things that are going on. We're really coming into a serious time in the world, and there's things the United States is doing. It's in a place that's, I don't even know how we can justify where it says we're talking about $34 trillion. Again, it only happens in a fiat system. It can't happen. And that's one of the main problems. Instead of the representatives of the people being fiscally responsible, they'd rather thieve from other people. As we see, White House backs bill on seizure of frozen Russian assets. The Russia White House supports a bill that would allow the confiscation of Russian frozen assets and their transferred to Kiev, citing the note to a note from the United Nations Security Council, a note, folks, to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Did everybody get the memo? Well, I guess they did on this one. Just a note drove this whole thing. It's amazing to me to hear. The United States administration welcomes the bill in principle, the NSC was quoted as saying, adding that it would, quote, it would provide the authority needed for the executive branch to seize Russian sovereign assets for the benefit of Ukraine. Sovereign assets, folks. These are hardcore international criminals here that we're listening to. And they're now looking also within this article for co-conspirators, as we read, all at the same time, the United States authorities would like to coordinate their actions with partners from the G7 countries to reduce risks of undermining foreign investors' trust in the United States financial system. Now you tell me how stealing sovereign assets is going to fortify trust in the United States financial system, and I'll show you a bunch of thieves, an organized syndicate of thieves. Moscow, on the other hand, has repeatedly stressed that any attempt to confiscate Russian frozen assets over $300 billion, would violate international law and will trigger legal response from Russia. For as much as we hear the United States administration talking about international law, they are looking at it too. It's funny how you can see two sides of the same coin, but that law is a standard. And you're not supposed to touch sovereign debt. And all this is in their statement, Russia will constantly exercise its rights to a legal battle internationally, nationally, or otherwise. What am I talking about? The sanctions being part of a war. And so here we are. They're bringing that, reserving that right as a sovereign against its sovereign wealth theft. Russia is viewing this, that both Europeans and Americans understand this principle very well. It will have legal consequences for those who initiated and implemented it, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said, commenting on the issue. Wouldn't it just be more ethical and moral just to balance the economy in the United States and stop picking fights or threatening everyone? Especially when those arms and threats are in violation of our own laws, not just international law, they violate our own laws. They're being implemented in violation of international law when they commit whatever euphemism you want to call genocide, ethnic cleansing, whatever is going on over there, by a belligerent occupier. All this is against our law, the United States domestic law, and international law. And so I looked on this and I go, does anybody have to believe in the Bible to know thou shalt not steal? When he says, and Dmitry points out, both Europeans and Americans understand this very well, this principle. These organized criminals in D.C., the District of Criminals in D.C., must not be Americans, as far as I can tell, because Americans know this principle well. They apparently don't. They apparently are trying to say that they're your representatives as well. As we also see, consistent with this hypocrisy, the United States goes on, have no ethical, no moral backbone whatsoever, and I don't see them intending to have one. U.S. reopens ports to Russia oil despite sanctions. The United States has imported Russia oil for the first time since April 2022. The imports totaling 36,800 barrels in October and 9,900 barrels in November were conducted for $2.7 million and $749,500, respectively. According to the data, the United States purchased Russian oil for the consumption of both October and November. At the same time, one barrel of Russian oil cost the U.S. $74 in October and $76 the following month. This is significantly higher than the price cap, in quotes, price cap, set by the country, the United States, at $60 per barrel when it instituted those sanctions. So here we have stealing sovereign wealth, and then you go to your victim to purchase their products you need. It still indicates that there's no principles left in the United States anymore. Absolutely not. Not diplomatically, for sure. And I can almost see Russia charging the United States companies from here out $300 billion for the next load of oil plus $74 a barrel, plus shipping and handling, can't you? They're going to get their money back. Brandon here can he can fill the strategic reserve he pilfered with that, I think, as we're watching on what he's done with that. Three times, folks. They're realizing that Brandon's going to pay three times for the oil that Trump was going to get, actually less than half at the time, and he was stopped by the Democrats. I'm wondering what this is going to come out, and I'm just wondering if the message will finally settle. Just go ahead and keep stealing sovereign wealth, and you're going to see what's going to happen to you, United States. As we, again, just a terrible clown show going on in Washington. No scruples whatsoever. And so we look at this, and so what did Congress do with all this? You know, we've got a responsibility to our people. We got sovereign wealth we should be using to defend ourselves. We shouldn't go steal someone else's. Well, where's the sovereign wealth of the United States owned when Congress hits the accelerator toward the cliff in their using their fiat? And we see and hear United States government funding deal total failure, costs $1.65 trillion as the bipartisan deal negotiated in the United States Congress to fund the federal government through the end of the fiscal year is a total failure with a cost higher than announced by congressional leaders, the House Freedom Caucus said in a statement in opposition to the agreement. Quote, don't believe the spin. Once you break through typical Washington match, the true total programmatic spending level is $1.65 trillion, not 1.59. That is a total failure, the House Freedom Caucus said. Now, between you and me, folks, I don't know about that 0.00 bit a trillion. That's way, way too much already. Remember, this is the Unit Party, and so there's a circus going on at about every turn now. And so these are also the increasing funds for war, whatever they want to call a failure, from the Unit Party. And so we look at, like, I wanted to look at war. You know, the War Department is now named the Defense Department. Now that's real similar to when they made credit mean debt. So again, these euphemistic terms to hide the criminal nature, the immoral nature, the unethical nature that we've been suffering since the Lincolnization of the United States. And I don't, like I said, I don't know how we survive a bit of that. And I think we're going to continue where it's not enough people that understand. We've been undereducated for sure as a population to understand what we're going to need to do. And a lot of it's going to, as I said, you take on your own austerity. You look and separate yourself. But we also have, on again, this government agency control of things that you could use in the news as well. U.S. regulator hack causes Bitcoin whiplash. So this is, again, showing the nature of the economy in this country, United States as a country. The United States Security and Exchange Commission claimed on Tuesday that its apparent approval of Bitcoin-denominated exchange-traded funds, which sent the value of the cryptocurrency soaring, was the result of a hack. At 4:26, the original post was at 4:11. At 4:26, however, Gensler himself posted a message saying the SEC account was compromised and an unauthorized tweet was posted. The regulator has not approved the listing of trading of spot Bitcoin exchange-traded products. In response to the original announcement, the price of Bitcoin surged from 46,000 to 600 to 47,900, only to crash. They say here, crash to 45,000 after Gensler's follow-up. Quote, total failure SEC cybersecurity imposes billions of pointless losses on investors, said psychology professor and crypto observer Jeffrey Miller, noting that the initial spike wiped out people shorting Bitcoin and the crash wiped out those who used options to go long. So, well, I have only a couple observations just surface-wise on this. I got 2 points, I think, here. The first is that this is what happens in the hackable digital age to your lives, folks. Look at the example and the evidence of what's going on here. Because the United States is supposed to be like dominating the digital realm, remember? That's the military. They're not doing such a good job. But the second point, so your live is going to be hackable. It just, I don't know how many stories I don't tell y'all about how hackable it is. I hope you're really paying attention. I hope you're doing everything to avoid all of that. But the second point here, where the inventors of the medium, the Bitcoin, did not take any steps to isolate it from the government intervention. This is something I have advocated for a long time, that they needed to make that definition for themselves. They needed not to get into a regulatory body, and they needed to keep themselves distant. As long as our value stores, or what people think is money, is speculation-based, and worse now, hackable or not, the government bureaucrat can come in, and this medium is bureaucratically dependent. So there is no security. This is the evidence of your future token citizenship insecurity, and is a manipulation by those with your MasterCard. These are the ones that are going to be controlling all this, telling you they can be hacked. And on the other hand, it would seem from the notice, we can read Lori Schock, the SEC's Director of Investors Education and Advocacy, advising investors to be careful about buying the latest new cryptocurrency or token because, quote, there are serious risks involved, seems to, at least to me, to imply old cryptocurrency is slowly being accepted by the agency, whatever its administrative policies or officials have said against it at this point. It also appears that those that didn't speculate saw neither gain nor loss relative to their investment, unless it was try to jump in right there. But back, if you were holding on just to watch this and have it as a medium and use them in the moment, those that didn't speculate saw neither a gain nor a loss, but an adjustment completely nominal to other much larger speculatory swings in the past. Again, they talk about the $1.6 trillion to $1.5 trillion. That's not much. Like this one, $47,000 to $45,000. That's, for someone who wasn't in the speculation side, the gambling side, they're, in a way, not hurt at all, right? And this is kind of what gold does. So it kind of reflects gold. Gold just sits there against the purchasing power against other things. It's relatively constant. And we can actually see that it's at gain. Like I was showing you explaining to you the diesel fuel is much cheaper if you kept gold, much cheaper now than it had been for decades. It's kind of interesting comparison. So, and that whiplash here that the Bitcoin markets experienced on a hack, this is a third-party hack, and it did this to the value. And if you didn't think a whiplash is bad, a SWAT here can be lethal. That is in the news more and more. A Trump judge, SWATed in Washington. Police in the U.S. Capitol announced on Monday that they had received a false report of a shooting at the home of Judge Tanya Chutkan, who is currently overseeing the federal trial of former United States President Donald Trump on charges related to 2020 election. The Metropolitan Police Department took a call on around 10 p.m. on Sunday and sent the officers to Chutkan's Washington, D.C. home, and a spokesperson told reporters they quickly established that there had been no shooting. In a number of instances over the years, their practice of shooting first and asking questions later has resulted in the death of innocents. Attorney General Merrick Garland on Friday called the threats deeply disturbing, unacceptable, and threatening the fabric of our democracy. Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia has fumed about what she said was the FBI's inadequate response to the harassment. Quote, the FBI can do so many things, has even abused FISA to spy on hundreds of thousands of Americans, but cannot figure out who wants me killed by a hail of bullets fired by a SWAT team responding to a murder-suicide call supposedly coming from me, she told reporters at the end of December. Thankfully, my local police are far too smart, now know me well, and know exactly what these swatting calls are. And so let me go back to what Garland said, your attorney general, military, civil military. We don't live in a democracy. I'm going to respond to him, the law officer, the highest law officer in the United States. Oh, man. And if the Attorney General Garland thought we did, where was he to stop the threat before now? We've had plenty of examples. And why is he in the forefront of allowing 91 felonies against a guy appearing here, we see as appearing as a political hit, the governmental overthrow in creating J6 by the FBI, appearing to be election interference if you look at the way that way. The Epstein's client list that no one can get at, they certainly know, appearing to be a cover up of what I was calling Operation Compromise of all these representatives, not all, but a lot. Certainly the clients, certainly the people that were involved in the witnessing of being around. How about the big guy or the great Comey swindle? Where's Merrick Garland been in all this? And numerous other mistreatments. If equal justice were any consideration in our democracy, if it was a democracy or the fabric of democracy, where is this guy? He's supposed to be all over this, but he's not. Apparently the cops in Tennessee here, as we move along, weren't quick enough on the trigger to avoid an apparent consequential contribution to the death of an innocent in their wholesale rush to provide community care. And that's not care for you, folks. That's care for the community, them, the government, the public. The swatting call by teenagers who coveted Tennessee man's prized Twitter handle leads to his death, the man's death. Swatting. A 60-year-old Tennessee man apparently had a Twitter handle worth killing for, as the teenagers extorting him to give up his social media treasure made a false emergency call to police that led to his death, family members said. The incident occurred of the year 2020. Then Mark Herring got a phone call from his neighbor who told him there was a, quote, police everywhere because they thought a man had killed a woman on his property. But he came out of his house with the gun, thinking the murderer was on his property. He sees all these cops around him, and they ask him if he's Mark Herring, and to put his hands up. His daughter, Corinne Fitch, said in an interview with a television station. So he tosses the gun away from him to show he was not a threat, and he put his hands up. But Herring then suffered a massive heart attack and died. Quote, I believe he was scared to death. And that it was caused by his heart attack, and that is what caused his heart attack, another family member, Fran Herring, said. So here, it's interesting, the innocent die suddenly anymore, folks, but so stay safe out there, but anticipate this can happen to you, and it might help lessen when this affront by the cops happens to you. They didn't give the consideration, I guess, that they gave to Marjorie Taylor Greene. They probably maybe didn't even know this guy. But when this affront comes at you, you put it in your mind of seeing it at least in your mind's eye. Because in that moment, the stress level goes way high. If you put it in your mind's eye, it's a little bit easier to deal with. And I can tell you the uncertainty is keen when you're doing this. I remember I'm facing here this summer, the sheriff this summer due to that call, the phone call that my generator was running during an extreme fire threat. And so that started, what was it, to that night, it was supposed to be an inspector showing up with fire safety, and they were supposed to inspect that generator, and a fire warden was supposed to turn out. And what came with him, apparently at the moment I didn't know when I first saw, included the sheriff, and they arrived after 11 p.m., after dark in summer. I understand it was a lot later to get to dark. And their vehicles are black, and I could not identify that in the dark. I could here barely see someone behind his rig with his hand on a gun. I can identify that, and due to the headlights of the rig that was behind him, shining on him, was the only way I could see that. It looked like a sheriff deputy, so I'm having to assess this as fast as I can as I'm opening the door. It's like a commotion going on. And wanted to know, you know, I started wondering, what's he doing with his hand on his gun? What's he there for? What's he even here? I mean, what's his whole point about? And I'll tell you, it's not a very safe and secure feeling when you're doing that. So, I've been through that before. Remember, a long, long time ago, I was facing five cops. I made up a story about a traffic ticket. They made up the story. I was able to prove it later, 8 months later, win that case. But they're looking at you, yelling commands at you. They got their hands on their gun. You don't know if you're to have or to be at that moment. So I've been through that. And so I could mentally begin to assimilate what I was couldn't tell was out there, but I could kind of make certain and orient what I was thinking was going on, and I could put that in an order despite the surprise and potential threat, you know, as I walked slowly with nothing in my hands. I intentionally made that decision properly at that moment as the supervising deputy approached me. So pretty intense, all dark. Again, I'm just trying to show you that it helps to be cognizant of not be surprised at some point. It's still stressful, but you can handle it. And I'm not sure what the cops were there for at all, being that the fire warden and I had agreed the earlier evening to have an inspection the next evening. He wanted me to do some stuff, and I agreed. Just to keep the peace. I didn't want to make a fight with anybody. I just needed my generator running. I just needed the power. And maybe I should have requested a very much more specific time than just any time. I didn't expect them to come out like this. And I didn't see the fire rig until I stepped out way further to start to realize what was going on. And then the supervisor's talking to me about that. And that fire unit was behind the sheriff's rig. So they came in right up front. And it looked like another rig was even behind that fire rig, though I couldn't tell. So there's a lot of activity just a few 20 feet away going on. And I couldn't tell at all. And, you know, the lights are bright and it's air in your eyes and it's very difficult. One of the rigs looked like they backed out. There was still the confrontation, the interaction with the sheriff. It was basically okay. Nothing special. I wasn't making any furtive actions for sure. And I just started thinking this is an awful lot of rigs to come out to inspect my generator at any rate. But under protection of the sheriff, the fire warden took all of 5 seconds to determine that I was, quote, all good. And despite the extreme fire threat here also, folks, all good, folks, innocent due to necessity, the fire warden agreed, is my condition, didn't need all those cops, didn't need the threat, didn't need to see that cop with that deputy with a hand on his gun, and I had to do that because of an unlawful removal of my essential services, as I've talked to you shortly. The power and the water was off. I needed that generator. And you have to know a bit, and I knew enough to tell them what I needed to tell them, and I was all good, despite running a generator. It was properly done, properly so, properly protected. However, they needed to inspect that, I guess. But I think, you know, there was something else going on as well. But things ended for me on a more peaceful enough level, and better than Mr. Herring, for sure. This situation here seemed to me to be no different than a SWAT to me, through a different excuse, though. And knowing of some of the folks involved, the intentional abuse I've been going on against me, I believe it was a bit of a setup as a false allegation, and so many of which I've had to suffer this year. But the point is that being of level head, watching, and being prepared, put your mind in a set, anticipate this may happen to you. Okay, so all that all said, and all that thought, and all that didn't happen, that could look like it could happen, I think the cops are becoming more savvy to the SWAT threat to innocent people. And my incident was fairly ominous. An official request for assistance that wasn't necessary, that was not based on any actual threat or cause. So this becomes another common denominator, except maybe the favors to someone to make my life much more difficult is all I could come up with. But going to Mr. Herring, what he faced, the mass force apparent to him, we see in him a different threat. The people, when cops make their presence too big a showing before the need for a larger force is needed in this day and age, no cop serves here the public through so-called community care directly or indirectly killing an innocent people that comprise the community so-called that they serve. So we're looking at a different type of a thing here. This gentleman dies. He was of ill health, and he dies by the stress. We assume there's more in the report about the medical exam. It looked like it was a so-called natural causes, but it was his heart. And again, that died suddenly. I don't know what this guy's jab health was, but maybe the cops were only doing their job here, but someone died needlessly for no cause whatsoever. And I've been really watching. This is what got me really interested in what happened to me. This is what's the definition. understand this is starting to happen. The cops don't have to do anything. Just show up, and people can die. And they should have a more consideration for that. And so we're moving from the swatting that's becoming prevalent. We get Marjorie Taylor Greene upset with the FBI when it's the local cops that usually do that stuff. The different outcomes between the two, I wonder how privileged they are. But so we move from swatting to swarming, another case involving no cause whatsoever, the cause of death of someone, but still charged against the victim of the official abuse without apparent probable cause, and the ever-present threat of someone making something up. As I've been telling you, it's coming through. We see this. What are the charges against Virgilio Aguilar Mendez? A ruling against an immigrant teen over Florida deputy's heart failure sparks outrage online. And this is the people are going to be blamed no matter what position and condition you're in. Here the cop has a heart attack while he's arresting this kid. Netizens are outraged over the charges against Virgilio Aguilar Mendez, an 18-year-old Guatemalan immigrant. Mendez was arrested on May 2023 after a Florida sheriff deputy suffered a heart attack after apprehending him at a parking lot in St. Augustine. The officer passed away and Mendez was charged with aggravated manslaughter and currently remains behind bars for over 7 months. He was also charged with violently resisting an officer. After a December 22nd hearing, the farm worker was ruled incompetent for trial due to his limited language capabilities. Netizens were enraged by the teenager being charged with an officer's heart attack death and for being illegally and allegedly unconstitutionally apprehended. You notice it was allegedly unconstitutional. That's a presumption against your constitution right there. The teenager was sitting down and eating food The teenager was sitting down and eating food, but allegedly started walking away when he saw the officer pull up in his vehicle. The 52-year-old officer approached him and asked him why he walked away after seeing him. The teenager, who only knew the mom language, kept apologizing. He pointed in the direction and conveyed that he was eating and then drinking. According to a defense motion, he had left the motel to eat outside and was on the phone with a parent. The Virgilio Aguilar Mendez repeatedly said sorry and that he didn't know English. Kunovich, the officer, decided to search him, at which point he resisted while still apologizing. What followed was Kunovich tasing Virgilio Aguilar Mendez multiple times, trying to pin him down, but while he cried out in pain. Kunovich's body cam footage was released showing the confrontation. I can just tell you, you need to see this, folks. You need to see he didn't state any probable cause. He wants to know why he's eating outside. That's not a suspicious act. He's eating food. That's not a crime. Yeah, I highlighted he was a farm worker. He's not some vagrant, even though he's maybe an immigrant that may or may not be illegal. I don't remember now. We're not looking at this kid. He's a victim, like you could be. We're looking at whether the officials are doing what they should be. Multiple officers arrived at the scene later and helped Kunovich take down Aguilar Mendez, who tried taking control of the taser but was pinned down. Towards the end, the officers found that he had a foldable knife, which was later removed from his possession. A short time after the scuffle, a teen was detained. Kunovich passed away and was taken to a hospital where he died due to a heart attack. Medical examiners concluded that the officer died of natural causes stemming from a cardiac dysrhythmia or an irregular heartbeat. However, they also stated that this was caused by the emotional distress and physical exertion he had undertaken in order to apprehend Virgilio Aguilar Mendez. The Office of the State Attorney for the 7th Judicial Circuit of Florida and the St. Johns County Sheriff's Office charged Virgilio with aggravated manslaughter of a police officer and resisting arrest with violence. He has been jailed for 7 months without bond. So now we are presumptively liable for the death of an unhealthy state officer. It sounds just like what we're told happens in a communist China or Soviet Russia. And this story keeps going recently here, and they get moved, and we broach the idea. He was not He could not speak the language. This is very important. Listen to what's going on here. These are also defenses. Look what the state, the government's going to do. The ruling is in that whether the teen immigrant is competent for trial in St. John's officer's death. The teen immigrant charged in the death of St. John's County Sheriff's Sergeant, who collapsed and died after struggling to detain him, has been ruled incompetent to proceed to trial. Judge R., understand this is not mental, at least on the surface. And they had psychological experts who said it's not really mental, and it's a language barrier. So that, hold that in your mind as we're going to go look at this a little bit. But this is an incompetence to stand trial. Judge R. L. Smith, Lee Smith's ruling was filed with the St. John's County Clerk on court Friday. Several experts testified December 22nd that Virilio Aguilar-Mendez cannot understand the charges he's up against and the potential punishment, largely due to the limited Spanish and English that he speaks. The limited Spanish and English he speaks. Remember, he speaks the Mum language. The 18-year-old is charged with aggravated manslaughter of an officer and resisting an officer with violence. He will have to undergo treatment and observation at an appropriate facility to determine if he has the capability to learn enough to go to trial. Aguilar Mendez, who came here from Guatemala, was staying with other farm workers at the hotel. He is being detained without bail, which is the subject of another hearing as yet to be decided. Virilio Aguilar Mendez competent to stand trial during his December 22nd competency hearing? Both forensic psychologist Dr. Yenny Castillo and neuropsychologist Dr. Yolanda Leon explained how difficult it is to communicate with him, largely because he speaks a very distinct language of Mum and he even has trouble with Spanish. Each said he mostly answers yes or to questions, even when it's clear he doesn't understand and can't articulate when asked to explain. He can put together small, simple sentences, but the syntax is all off, Leon said. He particularly has trouble with numbers and dates, Castillo said. He couldn't understand the difference between being guilty, pleading guilty, or being found guilty, and those are very different concepts. He couldn't understand that, she said. He couldn't understand what the potential penalties are or the legal system. Are you taking notes, folks? Does anybody understand some of this stuff? Do you train hard to figure out how to know this stuff? And this guy is looking at a competency for not being able to stand a trial because he couldn't. Could he be taught in time for his case to go to trial, is the question the article asked. Leon doesn't think he can be restored to competency, but deserves the chance, says the judge. He deserves the chance. Do you get that, folks, living in the open-air prison? It is a benefit to get to trial. You can be made competent for, but the government wants to make sure that they provide that benefit. Don't you think it's interesting that he is incompetent? He doesn't get the benefit of being put in prison. If he's not competent, he can't be put in prison. Are you getting this? Are you getting how this starts to work? We'll go on and read. What's next about Virilio Aguilar and Mendez? They ask in the article, in addition to the competency-based training at the Volusia County Jail, the judge ordered Aguilar Mendez to receive prescribed psychiatric medications. Within 60 days or at a time the administrator or their designee from the SMA determines defendant has regained competency to proceed, they shall file a report with the court pursuant to the applicable Florida statutes and Florida rules of criminal procedures, the ruling states. Folks, they just said it wasn't a mental psychotic thing. They said he has a language problem. Since when here does psychiatric medications fix a foreign language he doesn't understand and can't articulate that asked to explain? How is it that he's going to be returned to something he never was? And this is all in an event that's invented by a cop who's dead. They don't have the probable cause to keep him either. It doesn't state, if you look at the video, I don't see any probable cause. Walking away from a cop is not probable cause. See, I'm looking at who in this story needs the psychiatric meds is what I started to think about. Well, here we read some more. This is very interesting stuff going on in this case. The case has received national attention due to the implications of the possible racial profiling of harassment, excessive force, and overcharging. Quote, the incident video clearly shows that the officer initiated contact with the 18-year-old Aguilar Mendez, unnecessarily accusatory and intimidatingly, not simply to gather information, said Domingo Garcia. Those of you that are paying attention, you understand this is a right of investigation, but he has no probable cause to do that as well. And Domingo Garcia is the national president for the League of United Latin American Citizens. Quote, it is unfortunate that the officer later died. Well, why is that? Because he can't state what his probable cause is. Unfortunate for the state, I would think. This is the real problem. The state has the burden. Why is this kid still in prison, in jail, waiting? Why? Now, I can get the bond because he's an immigrant. Whether or not that means he's going to flee, I don't know. But you're not show up for trial. But this is an interesting little problem that they have here that I'm not seeing resolved. Still, you must not place blame for the death of the young man who was himself a target of excessive force by police and swarming tactics by other officers who arrived at the scenes. So this is the land of the free and the home of the brave, folks? Really? Does my listener agree with this? Maybe you should think this one through. This is a very interesting case with all the swatting and swarming and all this other stuff going on. And the presumption that the state is right all the time, even though it has the burden. Very fascinating what's going on around here. So I'm asking, is it clear with this, or is it more clear that the people have become presumptive criminals in an open-air prison liable to every consequence, even those caused by the other, a state agent in this case, to suffer what I've been repeatedly saying, that you shall suffer and be subject to like punishment, pains, penalties, taxes, licenses, and exactions of every kind, and to no other, equally. And that's the direct declaration of equality that's maintained in 42 U.S.C. 1981. It's your equal rights. We're all going to be treated the same. The state can do no wrong. That's not the way I read this place was supposed to work. So are you, if you listen to this story, think this through, are you incompetent to benefit from government care, or might you see a language avoidance making you incompetent? I don't know about you, but I think my language centers is beginning to suffer some misfire, folks. My pronouns are goo, ga, and kuchub. I think, as I listen to that, why? Speaking of incompetent babble on here, another part, unsound minds report to miss if and they ain't psychopaths, a new technique for searching habitable planets discovered. I'm going to move on away from a little bit of that and move into some of this other neat stuff too. But it just still shows the insanity, psychopathy of people. They think they understand what's going on. They promote themselves as experts. They don't follow a thing, and everybody has to pay for it. But the ability of the body to reflect starlight, of a body to reflect starlight, was once the method of ascertaining an exoplanet's habitability, but new research has come up with a new detection method based focusing on atmospheric carbon dioxide. The proposed new method involves comparing the carbon dioxide concentrations of candidate planets with neighboring ones. A reduced level of CO2 level suggests that the gas has dissolved into oceans or been assimilated into planetary-scale biomass. Keep these points together for yourself, folks. Those of you indoctrinated by Greta, listen carefully. While the degree to which the planet reflects starlight was once the primary measure of planet's habitability, a recent revelation... The recent revelation shifts the focus to CO2 concentrations, which indicate the presence of water and raising the prospects for life. It's a revelation, folks. Who'd have thunk it? Carbon dioxide indicates life and water and more life in the oceans, which absorb carbon dioxide for life. truly a revelation to those riding the little yellow bus, folks. I've been telling people about this water absorption of carbon dioxide forever, as I've talked about this. Scientists, it's just a revelation to them now. And so I'm just looking at these satanic sustainable hypocrites who are trying to remove and get us to pay for that life-destroying act because you claim Gaia is poisoned by carbon dioxide, the very substance science now seeks to find life on other planets other than Gaia for. These are little yellow bus lunatics. Lunatics. Yeah, that's the moon. Lunatics, folks. Maybe they need to be first luna dwellers. We hear there's no carbon dioxide on the moon, don't we? They should be real happy there. Maybe Elon and Bezos can get on that, won't they, you think? Maybe you can ask them. Go ahead and send everybody to the moon. There's no carbon dioxide that we know of, but, or is there? Yeah. Make yourselves useful, Elon and Bezos. Protect Gaia, would you? Thanks. Hey, we won't tell them that carbon dioxide was found on the moon around 2009. Let's keep that to ourselves, okay, folks? So much nonsense. And more earth-shaking than all that, folks, we can find terrestrial consequence. Earthquake detected in New York prior to reports of Roosevelt Island explosions. This is for those of us that are watching the sky and the sun and all this. It's a very, very dynamic universe, solar system, and a world that we can watch and pay attention to, how frail man is and how little anthropomorphic anything does anything with it. The United States Geological Survey told Sputnik on Tuesday that it had detected an earthquake in New York's borough of Queens prior to the reported explosions in the area. The U.S. energy company Con Edison told Sputnik on Tuesday that it had received no reports of either outages or equipment issues on Roosevelt Island, where the authorities are reportedly investigating the explosions. Despite that, Con Ed was not aware of any outages, there's these explosions and earth tremors. The New York City Fire Department told Sputnik the situation is under control, with the New York Police Department adding that a transformer was believed to cause the accident. How interesting is this mystery? Coincident, if not known causative, earth tremors prior and potential transformer explosions and a 7.6 earthquake in Japan after the X flare from the sun. Both explosion with or without electrical transformer destruction is explained by electrical energy discharges in the Earth's crust collected from the sun's activity. Neat, huh? Greta, did you hear that? There's a sun. Hey, that produces energy. It's absorbed by the Earth. What a shocking revelation here, folks. There's a sun. How many times I know those of you listening for a long time, you hear this, but I can't believe that people don't believe there's a sun. If you believe in sustainability, if you believe in climate change, you have to believe there's no sun. It's the first rule. And that sun here interacts with the Earth. The man-made anything can't affect it, not even Michael man-made global warming. And so, Greta, I hope you're paying attention to this. We have it over and over, but there's a reality out there, and it's way neater than your fear-mongering. Or the abuse that you've suffered to believe that the oceans are going to boil away. As we listen here, mammoth tusk mysteries here, folks. Interesting. You start putting it all together. You start playing all the theories that are being told. Nothing of it starts making sense. And it frees you up a little bit to start thinking more clearly beyond the programming that we have. It may not give us a lot of answers, but it gives us a better, clearer view of a better reality than most of the case here. We see mammoth tusk discovered in North Dakota mine is one of the state's most complete specimens. During Memorial Day weekend in the North Dakota mine, coal miners stumbled upon a significant piece of natural history, a long mammoth tusk that had been buried in the Freedom Mine since the Ice Age was discovered while extracting dirt and rock with a bulldozer. The North Dakota Department of Mineral Resources said in a news release. According to the DMR, two species of mammoth roamed North Dakota during the Ice Age, working close to 2 weeks to unearth the specimens from the stream bed left them with more than 20 additional bones, including ribs, a shoulder, a blade, and a tooth, and parts of the hips. So this is fossil fuel comes from them bones. Really? We got fossils. That one dinosaur, I guess, created that whole carbon, that old carbon bed, that whole coal bed. In particular here, this one animal from the frozen ice age with a massive coal deposit in a stream bed. A stream bed, folks. Think about it. That sounds real logical. Petroleum, dem bones, fossil fuels in a stream bed. Reconstruct the world for yourself right here, because it's not making sense for me. I get to be free now to say, how do I get coal? How do I get the ingredients for coal in a stream bed? Fossil fuels from dem bones and stream beds, folks. How did those bones escape becoming fossil fuel in a buried stream bed? Coal on a surface stream bed here, folks. Presumably, those stream beds carried water. That's the story? You read that? That's it? That's all that's going on? How hard is bone squoze to get fossil fuel, folks? There's some missing parts in this mammoth tail, aren't there? Put that together for yourself. Construct that image of these bones, them bones, fossil fuels, coal on stream beds where water should flow. And to me, I get a whole different earthly dynamic going on, and I can just tell you, anthropomorphic anything had nothing to do with any of it. But we had the coal, didn't we? We had the carbon, we had life, and we had death. And speaking of mammoth death on a potential mammoth consequences, which didn't include use of a bulldozer, the senior Hamas leader killed in Beirut blast, Hamas said Tuesday that one of its senior leaders had been killed in an attack in the south of Lebanese capital Beirut, raising fears of potential escalation in the fighting in the region. At least four people were killed in the attack that targeted an office building to Hamas in the southern Beirut suburb of Dahiyeh, Lebanese news agency reported. Let's get this, because we're going to international law. An office building of Hamas. And I need you to remember, Hamas is a governmental civil organization as well as the military, and international law says everyone is to recognize in the moment which capacity any one of these people are, and I haven't found that this was a military office. This appears to be Hamas's civil office outside of Gaza. And this is another point we're going to hear coming on. At least four people were killed in the attack that targeted an office belonging to Hamas. Lebanese Prime Minister Najib Makati condemned the attack and said that the explosion is a new Israeli crime aimed at drawing Lebanon into a new phase of confrontation. Asked to confirm that Israel was behind Arouri's slaying, Israeli military spokesman Daniel Hagari told the media briefing, quote, "We are focused on killing Hamas." Let me just interject again. If Hamas is in its capacity as a government, as it's been elected into, that's an international law war crime going on, quote, "But whoever did it must be clear this was not an attack on the Lebanese state," he said. It's a Israeli official. "Whoever did this did a surgical strike against Hamas leadership." And that has a follow-on story as we're watching these professional liars work, just like in Congress. Israeli drone kills Hamas deputy leader in Beirut, says Lebanese Palestinian sources. Israel killed Hamas deputy leader Saleh al-Arouri in a drone strike in Lebanon's capital of Beirut Tuesday. Arouri, 55, was the first senior Hamas political leader to be assassinated. Hamas radio and TV and Lebanon's pro-Iranian Mayadeen TV confirmed word from the security forces that Arouri, a member of the Palestinian Movement's Politburo based abroad and a co-founder of Hamas military wing, the Eyes al-Din and al-Qassam brigades, had been killed when a drone struck a Hamas office in South Beirut. Now we see, what is this office? It's the Politburo political office. Two security sources said that the drone targeted a meeting at the Hamas's Al-Aqsa television. In all, the drone attack killed six people in the city's southern suburb. Arouri had spent time recently in both Lebanon and Qatar, where a Hamas official said he was at, quote, the heart of negotiations, close quote, conducted by Cairo and Doha over ways of resolving the Gaza conflict. Hamas response to the ceasefire proposal is shortly before Arouri's killing. Hamas's paramount leader, Ismail Haniyeh, who is also based outside Gaza, said the movement had delivered its response to the Egyptian-Qatari ceasefire proposal. Let's look a little bit at this. So Israel knew these Hamas leaders were outside Gaza as they bombed Gaza, purporting to kill these leaders that the Zionist Federation knew were not in Gaza. Is that correct? I think it says so. But the Zionists are, see, killing civilians anyway. As I said here a couple weeks ago, or last week, a very small island, folks. These people, these killers, need to go to a very small island. Hopefully in the South China Sea, where there's rocks and they get submerged every half a day. And we aren't hearing that he was functioning, but we can put together that it looked like he was in a political function. And the governments are, everyone's supposed to identify whether that is a governmental capacity or a military capacity. And I'm going to recall you again, I don't have an opinion on this too much more than there's an agreement, an international law agreement across the world that everyone's supposed to follow, even in war, as oxymoronic as that sounds, and there's reasons why you do it like this, that is being violated across the board, and really nobody saying much of anything. So, if you recall that it's a war crime for a belligerent occupier, that's the Zionist Federation, what we call Israel, Israelis, to kill a governmental official not engaged in resistance at the time. So, it doesn't look like that he was doing it. I've been looking. They have not claimed that he was. And so this is the law. The belligerent occupier is required, the occupying force, to make the distinction between civilian or civil activities and the military. And as usual, as we're watching this thing, the psychopath Zionists could care less, absolutely could care less, and they are supported by a government and a military of this country. Remember, I talked earlier in the broadcast, it is looks like they're violating our own laws to do what we're doing. And I don't even have to think hard on that one. Of course we are. So I translate this. Whatever's over there, folks, is happening here locally, is what I'm saying. It just may not look quite the same. No, we don't see the drones firing on our own people, unless you were over there and you were the U.S. citizen that Obama droned and his son, remember? But so how are you going to be treated any different as a civilian in your own country under a belligerent occupation that we can identify as the U.S. federal government, folks? And I don't ask you to take that on until you've done this research to be able to say it yourself. I want you to see the words. I've done a lot of the reading to get a lot of people down the path. I've told you I don't see what's going on over in Palestine and Gaza any different than to the United States itself. The post Founding Father era, the Lincolnization of this country. And we look in the article and they talk about the wanton slaughter of innocent civilians. True Americans do not support the wanton slaughter of innocent civilians, the liquidating of women and children. It's completely morally reprehensible. Agreeing to such a mass murder is a total lack of moral character, as you'll see someone discussing this article. You'll see people discussing this condition. They're witnessing this lack of moral character in the United States. I'm almost thinking we can't even put that on the Zionist Federation. There's nothing in them, as I said last week. And I would have to ask those of you that believe otherwise or support Biden the butcher or Blinken the butcher or the genocidal Congress critter killers, I think y'all need to find a small outcropping of rocks in the South China Sea and move there with the Zionist psychopaths. We don't need you here. We don't need your influence here. And we don't need your example. And we, the people, are not going to like the world that emerges if these Zionista maniacs and their supporters have their way, and unaccountably so. Because who are you going to call when they come after you, folks? With no good reason other than you benefit from equal rights to pay wrongful extortions of every kind, and unless you can't speak the language, it seems, as well. Feeling like your language centers are breaking up? Maybe that's another way. I've thought about this for a long time. That's why I'm talking a little bit about it. You just have a different language, and you can't be trained to be competent and take the benefit of going to prison. Maybe there's an actual type of an avoidance right there. Maybe there is. I may not be the one to pull that off, but one of you guys may be real creative to think about that hard. Don't get yourself in trouble, though, to prove it, but you can do it just about any time. A traffic ticket might even do it. As the spoils of war extending to women and children is a Western feature here now, isn't it? We read Ecuadorian TV crew taken hostages as camera rolls. I want you to listen to the notice, the news, the international news, the consistency with the Western approach to taking out countries. And there's people out there that have done a bigger study than I'll ever do that will explain it in books and things just prove all this stuff out. The gunmen have stormed a broadcast studio amid a wave of violence after the countries that he declared a 60-day state of emergency to combat narco-terrorists. And man, there's a deep a thing about that, and the United States supporting that as well, and on the other side of its own border in Mexico, and causing a lot of these troubles that we see. However, moving on to this story, listen to the consistency with the overthrows of government or the attempts of government. This is beyond now a color revolution. This is really moving into where the government's going to shut down what's been a cancer in their government. You know, I'm not making a decision, good or bad, indifferent. I'm indifferent to all of it. I just want to point out the consistency of the methods that are used. And I look around and I see those methods in the United States itself working against our own people in different ways and forms. They're not obvious like we're seeing, let's say, now in Ecuador. TV crew, news crews in Ecuador have been taken hostage by masked assailants who stormed the station studio during a broadcast, waving guns and explosives as a presenter pleaded for help. The dramatic on-camera hostage incident came as South American country descends into chaos with kidnapping incidents reported at university, a hospital, a prison, and police stations. Criminal groups have reportedly carried out a coordinated attack across the country, setting off explosives and taking hostages, including dozens of prison guards and at least 7 police officers in 3 cities. And I guess it's another example, as we keep they're drumming the Civil War thing. Look at what it takes and look what's going on, the organization and what's going on, and watch the outcome. And do we want to, if we're going to look at that as an example, is that the example we want for us? Or do we want to do things a little bit sharper and smarter? But you notice they went right for the TV, the communication center. That's just another example of what war is, and this war could be real and live. But it's an imposed type thing, organized, I think, by a foreign government, and I can suggest it probably the West somehow. A video posted on the social media shows one of the officers reading a message directed to President Daniel Noboa as a gun was pointed to his head. Quote, "You declared war, you will get war," he said. "You declared a state of emergency. We declare police, civilian, and soldiers to be the spoils of war." Now, I don't know what those words mean to you, but you get international law and the law of war and all this. We've heard blood and treasure and all that. This is serious stuff. We're watching examples in the world right now of what happens and what people do and what they say. And again, the Yemenis are doing something. I'm not going to get to those stories. They've been attacked. The United States did its thing. Britain did its thing, and they came back and said, "Okay, that was your hit. Now wait for ours." And we'll see. I don't know. But the spoils of war are declared to be the government itself, the civilians as well, women and children. Look at the consistency between the Middle East and this. Sounds a bit here more intense than a Western plan color revolution here, doesn't it, folks? If you listen carefully to what's going on, this is a nationwide execution. And so it sounds like things were ramping up real quick. So look how this works out. If there's been something organized and fomenting underneath the surface, how fast it comes up. And these are all narco-terrorists. This is what, when I was highlighting that, it's not that they may not be. I'm saying there's an organization of narco-dealers that are flush with money because of the drugs, way more capable, more armed than maybe other countries in South America. And so this becomes a real threat on that. That, again, if you look at the methods, could it happen where you live? You're not seeing it now, or you're not seeing it obvious. Although Mr. Hare died just from the army that showed up, and he was innocent. The immigrant from Guatemala, he can't even understand what's going on. He's a farmer. He's a worker, folks. Eating, calling his family. And just because some guy with a blue badge decides, I'm going to make your life miserable, he's going to be miserable. And so don't underestimate what I'm saying. Look over there. We might see a reflection back here. Just a little bit different, just a little bit less. They don't want to rile us up too much and too fast unless they have a control of us. And you're watching that behavioral control through the media and all this other stuff. It's in the news all the time. So we have another warning relative to these war statements, the rumors of wars and wars, folks. Swedes told to prepare for war. Again, in the West, what is this? I don't see the reasons for that. Maybe Ecuador, maybe they've got a big crime problem. I know the people of Ecuador are coming out to tell the president, thank you very much for stopping these criminals. That's real, but someone's using them. And they're organized, even though they would actually be at their throats if they were not organized. So this can turn around really quick, really fast. But this country must brace for a potential confrontation with Russia. Delegates at the major conference have been told the top Swedish officials have urged the country's citizens to prepare for potential war, amid rising tensions with Moscow. It's self-inflicted tensions that's rising from Swedish government, and they're now preparing their people. What I told you, the government has to get the consent of the people. They have to get the momentum of the people behind them. And that's not happening in a lot of things in a lot of places, but Putin did it. I showed you. Look at this. This is how they do that. And they're doing it here in the United States, but they do it a different way. And they got a lot of people. So those of us that see a different reality, we can't be quiet too much. We do have to spread the word. We do have to be logical, hopefully more logical and more foundational than what you're hearing. But their people are being told, prepare for a war. That may or may not happen, but we're going to have you, your mind is being programmed now. In a speech on Sunday, Foreign Minister Tobias Billstrom hailed his country's expected membership in NATO as the biggest change in Swedish security policy in more than 200 years. Is this really security, folks? Remember, it's always the opposite. Credit is debt. War is defense. Security is vulnerability. You don't know that it's not Russia. It's going to be the one that, while you're acting, which has ended up being the West, the United States, or the financiers there. Billstrom warned that, quote, Russia will constitute a serious threat to the security of the Sweden and Europe for the foreseeable future. He added that Stockholm, quote, must be realistic and assume and be prepared for a drawn-out confrontation. They don't have anything going on right now, folks. It's all looking at Ukraine. And the violation of the West through the agreements that they had with Russia that Russia could not found as an existential threat when they were violated. Echoing the sentiment of defense war minister Paul Johnson said, war can also come to us, claiming that Ukraine is acting on Europe's shield in the conflict with Russia. There's no conflict going on, actually, folks, but this is what they do. This is how they stir the people. I don't know. Can you hear Hitler here? Can you hear anybody that's ever stirred the population into war and fervor to go bomb kids and mothers and other innocent people? They're just doing it. I hope those people that are there step up and tell everyone, all the officials, just to shut up and sit down. But here we go. Last year, Sweden ditched its policy of non-alignment in favor of a NATO, citing Russia's military operation in Ukraine, which was launched in February 2022. The neighboring state of Finland opted to do the same, joining NATO in April 2023. What did I say? Self-inflicted wound. They didn't have to do that. Russia was perfectly fine with them being neutral. It pleaded with them to stay neutral. No, they're going to go ahead and do it. I don't know what the perks are. I don't know what these officials are going to get, but this is not the thing we wanted to hear on the world stage. but you see the West influence in all of it. Speaking to his country of future role in NATO at the same annual conference last year, Chris Dirksen said, quote, having nuclear weapons on our own territory in peacetime is in the cards. Who's the aggressor here now, folks? But Moscow has stated that NATO's continuing expansion towards Russia's western borders, as well as the refusal to rule out Ukrainian membership in the future, are among the key causes of the ongoing conflict. Countries ought to be prepared. Yeah, that is true, but this appears to be another self-inflicted wound to scare the population into doing something, the next stupid thing, given Russia has not been posing any threat than the propaganda that the West perpetrates in its cognitive warfare against all populations, as we're all watching all in this. It's hard to escape the idea that so much expense is being made to get nuclear weapons next to Russia, folks. You just heard the truth of what that's all about. But someone isn't counting on the return investment here, all the while Russia is saying, don't poke the bear. I mean, really, what is this insanity? We read, Russia sees NATO as a threat to national security. That was the existential threat, NATO. NATO was supposed to fight and protect against Soviet Russia. It does not exist. This is a dinosaur. This should be eliminated. If Europe wants a military together, Europe can develop one on their own dime. We don't need NATO. We don't need it as a fraudulent front as well, actually poking the bear, another nuclear power. Here, clearly the answer is to get rid of the destructive dinosaur here called NATO, otherwise made extinct when that object of its mission, the Soviet Russia, ceased to exist due to being struck by an immense political asteroid there. Of the European countries want to create that defensive alliance, let them do so, but it's on their dime. Again, as I said, we're talking about nuclear weaponry, the use of nuclear weaponry, why they want those weapons right near Moscow. They want it just minutes. They want to do a decapitation. I don't even think that could work, but they want to do a decapitation of Russia so they can then take over the wealth of that large country, which does well for itself. If you're watching, I said they're going to production. Everything they're doing is in ramping up production fast, and they have markets for it. Whenever you have something that other people need, you're going to find a market. You're watching that happen. So we have nuclear powers here, contrary here to the West, that claims, Russia's claim that they're not going to make any unprovoked first strike, and they've never said, they've always been true to that. They've never used a nuclear weapon, unlike the United States itself. That the Swedes changed their policy, a security policy, we know the opposite of that is insecurity. Wow, really wow. Just, I don't even know what more to say. And because Ukraine is a Europe's shield as well, what is this phrase coming in? Ukraine's top general asked politicians to fight. The army has to get replacements somehow, Valery Zelensky told lawmakers. And a general is going to general, I think, here. We need replacements to be the last Ukrainian, says Zelensky's potential political contender, as Zelensky might be on his way out, if we're hearing. And likely he's on his way to the Miami mansion that was paid for by the American people in all this money swapping that totally is not agreed to until it was just agreed to. This general is the Ukrainian Gerald Celente, if you listen to Gerald saying, who tells all the U.S. politicians that say we need to fund Ukraine to go over there, be the first to fight, show us how it's done. And so this guy's saying the same thing. I find that really funny. But we can only hope, folks. We can only hope that the politicians and their sons and daughters would go first in all of this stuff. And another thing here that we go through that blew up in the government's face when went up in flames, Panama Papers investigations not sufficient to charge. And again, there's legalisms in all this, and I point out the international law showing us a lot of stuff. I've talked a little bit about the Panama Papers. I didn't do an in-depth the study. I just wanted to show why they're using these things, what they do. India's top court rules in favor of Adani conglomerate in a major win for billionaire Gautam Adani. The court refused a special probe into stock manipulation. The allegations were made last year by American researcher firm Hindenburg. The Hindenburg Report, released on January last year, described the Adani Group as a highly overvalued and claimed that it had been engaged in a brazen stock manipulation and accounting fraud scheme over the course of decades. Can you hear it coming, folks? Can you hear it coming? Engages in brazen stock manipulation and accounting fraud. Overvalued. Where have we heard that? So the Hindenburg goes up in flames in this one again for this something very similar to what Trump is facing today, overvaluation for the purpose of loans. But why does the Hindenburg once again go up in flames? The established official record, folks. When you read this, as I've been telling you, watch your record, how your record's made or made against you, or the presumptions that are left laying on the ground that they can pick up and beat you with. The Supreme Court held that there was no grounds to doubt an investigation carried out by the SEBI. The bench also noted that the regulator has already completed its investigation of 22 out of 24 cases against the Adani Group that is in its probing. The bench, headed by Chief Justice D.Y. Chandrachud, also noted that petitioners had relied on reports by newspapers and the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, an international investigative platform known for its work on the Panama Papers and the Pandora Papers. Quote, such reports by independent groups or investigative people by newspapers may act as inputs for the SEBI or the expert committee. However, they cannot be relied upon as conclusive proof of the inadequacy of the investigation of SEBI, the Chief Justice said, delivering the judgment. This is an administrative act, and it has force and effect in the law as law there, too. It's really consistent. So, what can we take about this? Those Panama Papers and the Pandora Papers, they can just shove it, because that's only the start of the investigation of getting the actual evidence to be able to make the allegation. That's actual evidence is required, not an allegation through some papers. But if no one will do the follow-up with the proofs, there will be no accountability ever, anywhere. In this case, the SEBI, in this case, was doing the investigation. The Panama Papers and Pandora Papers could not amount to any evidence against this guy. And I'm not saying he did anything wrong. I'm almost wondering, when you see the overvaluation for stock manipulation, sounded just like what we have in the United States against Trump. Again, the method. You watch it throughout the world. So this report further highlights to some of the players that might be sabotaging the effort if all of this isn't just a non-actionable public relation revelation in this ongoing episode of the global Kabuki corruption theater. Here it is revealed that apparent corruption is occurring, but one can't do much about it if it is nefarious, because we think what is evidence is not. And we're missing that. I just know that a lot of people I work with, they don't understand what is real evidence. We will work off of what we're told. It's very dangerous. But notably, Adani has pointed out in a statement that the OCCRP is funded by several governments and the non-governmental organizations, including the Open Society Foundation of the American investor turned philanthropist, George Soros, quote, who was openly declared his hostility against the Adani Group. Soros has previously raised questions about Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi and Adani being close allies. So this is all government-supported front to this guy, Soros allied. Does Soros dislike Trump? If we look at the method here, and were we also to see a civil case against him, an assertion of overvaluation, have we not seen that? Implying a fraud, just the bare assertion without proof, just like Adani. But the U.S. court wasn't as interested in the underlying facts more than a hearsay, it seems, when you look at that in Trump's case, such as Just Us in America, under the thumb of the Occupying Political Promoting Bar Association, under protection of the independence, the right of the judicial branch to be independent, even, as I have found, independent of the law itself. So it's kind of like that. There's a lot of moving parts going on that they're real easy to see that they are the moving parts that are really just candy, circus, whatever you want to call them, we're not getting to the core of it. And this little case shows us what we might see in the news, and it looks like incriminating evidence. That may be the first inkling that requires a lot more work to get the actual evidence against somebody. And this guy, Donnie, looks like he's being harassed, like maybe Trump is, and like a lot of other people in the world, maybe even a whole country like Russia. But this little, moving on to the next story here, it's a bit of a curious report where we see EU pressuring big tech to prioritize pro-Western journalism. And remember all the media influence that these folks have, these moneyed people have in the world, too. I'm trying to show us the information we get. It may be something, but it may not be enough. And we have to really do a lot more work. EU policymakers are urging Google and other tech giants to promote anti-government Belarusian media outlets at the expense of those allowed to operate freely in the country. Unnamed Belarusian journalists who have fled the country complained that the European Commission, that their content critical of Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko, is failing to reach target audiences. They blame the algorithms used by tech companies, which take into account local laws and legislation. Vera Jourova, European Commission Vice President for Values and Transparency, appeared sympathetic, telling FT that, quote, fighting disinformation and promoting media freedom are two sides of the same coin, and we want big tech to do both. She also insisted that Western companies should ensure visibility of trustworthy information. Boy, who's your gatekeepers here, folks? Who's she relying on? When you see transparency, we know it's occlusion. We know that. It's opposite word. You might as well just put it in there to understand what these folks are actually saying. Sympathetic to this whole condition. Why weren't these folks interested in the algorithms being consistent with local communicable disease law to find untrustworthy mainstream media when it provided misinformation, disinformation, and fake news in violating local law during the great COVID swindle, if law was so important here? What is this double standard that they're using? When you look at these stories and you start putting them in context, as I point out, I can just move this thing on over. Why is it important now and it wasn't during the great COVID swindle? Unless they're all in on it, I guess, is one thing. And governments will come against people and pressure them, even if they're just companies to try and get their favor too, like this was, and these companies will because there's money involved. They put pressure and they make your life miserable, if not impossible. And this next story kind of elucidates that a little bit. Moving into the UK, something here a bit different of an evil nature in censorship may become a strategic defeat if a journalist here prevails against state-sponsored defamation. A former civil servant in high court fight after being sanctioned. Graham Phillips, who has been described as a pro-Russian propagandist, in Parliament, was made subject to an asset freeze in 2022. Understand, Parliament directed their attention to this journalist and called him a pro-Russian propagandist. If you haven't read it, listened to him, maybe you should listen to him. Listen to what he says. I guess I have some opinions, but fair enough. He's another eyes on the ground. Patrick Lancaster used to work with this guy. They have had a feud. I don't know why. I have no clue. Doesn't make sense to me, but there it is. These guys are on the ground over there, and because they're showing the other side of the line, they're called propagandists. I'm just looking for information myself. I don't have to worry about the label. You see, the EU wants to press the tech and journalism about that, and you see the story going through that someone wants special favors because they're on the outs. They don't have the connection. Information is critical. So if you can destroy the messenger, you can destroy his message. And that's what's going on, I think, with Graham Phillips. Graham Phillips is going to start fighting back. He's made the subject of the asset freeze when they did that to him in January 2022. A decision up on ministerial review in February, a judge has been told. Lawyers representing Mr. Phillips, who is based in Ukraine, have taken legal action against the Foreign Office and said that the decision was unfair and should be quashed. Okay, very interesting. Little legal words right here. You can get a lot of lessons and you understand what they're talking about here. You understand what the process is. Now, Mr. Justice Swift, who is overseeing a hearing at the High Court in London, heard that Mr. Phillips had expressed, quote, political opinions on YouTube and social media to a primarily UK domestic audience, the extent of which this expansive statutory framework gives the executive the power to curtail lawful political speech through the imposition of sanctions on British nationals is a matter of very considerable public importance. The government importance, I'm sure. Here, the assertion that the matter is one of very considerable public interest is a statement in chancery here. If you're paying attention to the jurisdiction, the equity jurisprudence is required for the court to take the jurisdiction. But we can read the intention to quash more as an action on injunction here. We see Mr. Phillips was the first mono-British national to be subjected to sanctions by the British government, a barrister leading his legal team told the judge. He is not alleged by the defendant to have committed any crime offense, nor is he alleged to be part of a Russian state apparatus or to be actively involved in advancing the Russian war effort or supporting the Russian economy, Joshua Hitchens told Mr. Justice Swift in a written case outline. I hope you took a list of those points, because those are pretty standard general kind of things when they're like they presume upon you things that don't exist. Those are avoidance. So those haven't been done. Before you can do anything, you got to solve this. That's what their first defense coming into this is. Instead of his designation stems entirely from the political opinions expressed on YouTube and the social media to a primarily UK domestic audience. Mr. Hitchens said Mr. Phillips' designation was disproportionate. Sanctions are a central and regular feature of the UK foreign policy response to a whole host of nations and issues around the world, added Mr. Hitchens. So you hear they want to enjoin this action against quash and join this action against Mr. Phillips. So let us toss into the official sounding word salad then the error on the part of the learned barrister on Graham's behalf that the challenge here is actually that of a foreign office had no jurisdiction to make a decision regarding Graham at all. And I saw this and I want to come up to this opinion on this. This is my opinion. But if you missed this point, you agreed they had the jurisdiction. And what should have been challenged was that there was no jurisdiction because they hadn't fulfilled the rest. No jurisdiction to make a decision at all, folks, at all. It follows that the barrister's consent by representing Graham as to the disproportionality is incorrect then. Because all of it was wrong, not just disproportionate. As you see, his words are conditioned by agreeing to the authority, which looks to me doesn't have any authority whatsoever. As if something less appropriate was proper here, admits the foreign office did have jurisdiction and could make a decision. So the argument of the barrister is really incongruent on this. So let us toss into the official sounding word salad. Hopefully this incongruency is not fatal to Mr. Graham as I've been looking at this. Challenging jurisdiction is not in part. It's not halfway. It exists or it doesn't. Is really final here. You just got to make that decision. If they had prerequisites and they didn't do it, they don't have jurisdiction as an office to do any of this. He's won right off the bat, but that's not how they're playing this, so I'm concerned. But if there's no jurisdiction in the foreign office, then there was no jurisdiction to make a decision, neither proportionate nor disproportionate. If you think this through, it is also irrelevant then whether Mr. Graham is or is not a pro-Russian propagandist, though defaming him even so, which is a different action. So he actually could come at this a little bit more strongly. I'm glad he's fighting it, but I'm just really a little concerned. So this is the same error made by those saying that the Zionista response to their oppression is disproportionate when the occupying power has no right of action at all, as it seems this foreign office doesn't either. It's the same type of analysis. Let us toss into the official sounding word salad here. We would hope Justice Swift looks past the barrister's oversight and does justice, nonetheless, as the power of equity jurisprudence requires. So understand that when you make a complaint or anything you do, the judge in this is supposed to look through even your mistakes to do justice in an equity court. Because the point being, when a purported authority doesn't have all the requisite elements for jurisdiction in all of its facets, it has no power at all to act at all. And this is the critical thing. So there's no disproportion or proportionate. It's nothing. It's void. It's void on its face. Any such order here is just absolutely unenforceable, void, required, and it requires to be enjoined. And if this is where in America, likely the UK as well here, adversely affecting our property or rights here under color of authority without warrant, it's criminal if this was happening here. A felonious extortion or coercion. As I've explained, your statutes will explain this to you as well. You will read these sections of your code. The equity jurisprudence ought to provide compensation, not damages here. We're not saying we're getting damage. This is equity compensation. It's supposed to influence the perpetrator that they shouldn't do this in the future. It's large enough to impress that wrong to not be done again. And so understand when I say there's equity compensation, not damages. We're not being paid for the harm to us. It's really kind of it's equity problem. It's irreparable. Can't be paid back. So the reducible equivalent to that would be the equitable compensation for the official misconduct, that it provide a strong enough incentive here that the official will decide to never do this again. And this is how we would come right at them and powerfully just push the government back, because they realize that this is really well, they should have never made that extra step, but they made two steps too far. My suggestion here, when you look at this for you, even for yourself, don't concede not even as to extent that any jurisdiction is not fully established for it. You got to make sure that's done. That's required also in the law, which is all determined from the record as a matter of law. There's no merits here. Not an argument or opinion that these barristers are attempting, and is not disproportionate to something that was void ab initio from before it began. So if it's void from before, there's really no argument anymore. It was void to start with. If you think back here, I had you use, those of you that looked and did, if you remember, I had you use that very avoidance for the Covey swindle from the local communicable disease law. If you think I'm just talking about some news about the UK and journalism and all that, yeah, I'm talking about that, but I'm showing you there's stuff in the news that tells you that if we look through the problems, that they tell us that we have action we can take locally and better than maybe these barristers. And I would like to have, I don't want to have a talk with them, I don't have time, but nor the interest. I don't think I can make an influence, but it'd be interesting to see why they went that way. Why did they agree that the Parliament had an authority where they couldn't find the very important elements ahead of it to give that agency an authority, give that official an authority? Yeah, so speaking of long-suffering Brits, and Graham Phillips has really been suffering a little bit on that, the homeless population surges in rural England. Says a study, the new number of people sleeping rough, meaning those living in open air in tents, makeshift shelters, or buildings not meant for human habitation, has increased in the UK from 17,022 counted in 2018 to 24,000, some in 2023. The problem is more severe in rural areas than in many England's towns and cities, including London, Leeds, or Norwich. The number of displaced persons in Britain surged by 14% in December compared to the same month last year, and separate report from housing charity Shelter was revealed. It would likely take the country half a century to resolve its housing crisis in the UK. England, Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Wales was short about 4 million homes. So can you see how the government can manipulate the economy such that it eventually gets the people into the 15-minute stack 'em and pack 'em sustainable future here? Can you watch how this dynamic works? Yeah, it's kind of like that. Just watch the dynamic. Watch the method that they get. They're willing to go 50 years to accomplish the sustainable future that they want. And certainly the sustainable king is okay with you suffering there in Brit, and all government officials, you suffering to get you and your future generations into the prosperity of impoverishment there. Remember, austerity, forever indebted through A2030, the goal. Talk about suffering again in the UK. Oh, I don't know how you guys haven't went into a big old giant revolution. UK breweries going bust. The number of insolvencies among the craft beer producers have tripled in the past year. Research shows pub and bar bankruptcies across the UK have been at nearly the highest level in a decade. Well, that's only a decade. Not bad, huh? Since 2009? Yeah, maybe. Hey, wow. Well, global again. Well, with more than 500 businesses folding last year, according to the accountancy firm UHY Hacker Young, the sector has been struggling for a combination of soaring energy prices and high inflation. Right to plan, folks. And so, we see the breweries are going down 500. That's a lot of local energy, local economy being killed. And that's just one of the industries going down. Bankruptcies on the increase. This is, again, a global feature. And long-suffering Brits are continuing to do so. When you see that Graham Phillips case and you wonder, Maybe it's for real. They'll take you out one by one, and they don't mind taking 50 years to do it either in groups. And something here I believe should be very considerable public-private interest, likely unavoidable in this open-air gulag we all seem to live in. Police to be able to run face recognition searches on 50 million driver's license holders. Exclusive, here the report, privacy campaigners say the clause in the new criminal justice bill will put all UK drivers on permanent police lineup. The police will be able to run facial recognition searches on a database containing images of Britain's 50 million driver's license holders under a law change being quietly introduced by the government. Should the police wish to put a name or to an image collected on CCTV or shared on social media, the legislation would provide them with the power to search driver's license records for a match. You're in real ID all here, right here, folks? Are you? The move, contained in a single clause in a new criminal justice bill, modernized, no doubt, could put every driver in the country in a permanent police lineup, according to privacy campaigners. They think they diminish this problem by saying privacy campaigner. You don't want to be put in a digital police lineup for any reason. Remember, facial recognition is notoriously bad. It's like AI, error-prone, AI-prone. The intention to allow the police or the National Crime Agency to exploit the UK's driver license records is not explicitly referenced in the bill and on its explanatory notes, raising criticism from leading academics that the government is sneaking it under the radar. I guess that's speed trap radar. Nevertheless, Professor Peter Fousey, a former independent reviewer of the Met's use of facial recognition, said that there was insufficient oversight of the use of facial recognition systems, with the ministry worrying silent over studies that showed the technology was prone to falsely identifying black and Asian faces. He said, "This constitutes another example of how facial recognition surveillance is becoming extended without clear limits or independent oversight of its use. The EU has considered making images of its members' states' driver's license records available on the PRUM crime-fighting database. The proposal was dropped earlier this year as it was said to represent a disproportionate breach of privacy." How about if we just don't let them have jurisdiction and we don't have to worry about how proportionate it is? In 2020, the Court of Appeal ruled that the South Wales police use of facial recognition technology had breached privacy rights, data protection laws, and equality laws, given the risk of the technology could have on race and gender bias. The force has continued to use the technology. Live facial recognition is to be deployed to find a match of the people attending Christmas markets this year against a watch list. Katie Watts, a lawyer at the civil rights advocacy group Liberty, said, "This is a shortcut to widespread surveillance by the state, and we should all be worried about it." Folks, be more worried about it than just be worried. Be more than worried. Take them behind the woodshed. Figure out what you need to do. Stop this. It's now come out, and I don't have that report. They've been using this database since 2019, I think it was. So talk about secretive, and talk about the surveillance state. Been moving along, just as I've been explaining, even if we didn't know. It starts to come out. We're behind the eight ball as people. I don't care what nation you're in. Been reading about all this as well. Public-private connections, the third-party danger, and now the government's using mass data, national databases, to put you in a police lineup, which is error-prone. Man, I don't know what the future is that people really want, but I can't imagine it's really this. And speaking here of public-private impoverishment, ever you thought about private becomes public privately. T-Mobile quietly updates its terms of fine commercial users for hate speech. And it does say commercial, but again, their policies are changing. A mobile communication giant, T-Mobile, has on the low updated its terms of service to include fines if content runs afoul of its perceived violations of hate speech and profanities. Again, they can make stuff up. I've been talking about this forever. The cop can make up the probable cause it doesn't exist, and then that kid, that Guatemalan kid, is going to go down because that guy was ill health. The state had an unhealthy officer that dies just in the interaction. If you can pull this all together for yourself. For now, at least, this applies to marketing text applications to people A2P, commercial and enterprise service, rather than the individual consumers, for now, it says. For example, businesses and campaigns emailing you will be subjected to this type of scrutiny, not messages to your friends. Anyway, there's big fines, $2,000 for a fine for direct harm to individual users, $1,000 for illegal content that must meet the standards of all 50 states. If you didn't think this was going to be there is no sovereign union, they're now going to be modeled into one big glom, mass of one law, and everyone's going to have to be figuring out what all that is. And then $500 if you want to spread the idea, the word about cannabis, marijuana, CBD, illegal prescriptions, and solicitation. So they've already now said your state law doesn't mean anything. Also, profanity and hate speech. Well, hate speech is what? We talked about that earlier in the broadcast a bit, and we may get onto that right now here as we move on to hate speech and who will decide and who has been the got me to think of who is the most influential on what they call hate speech, and I bring you to a Telegram account. What if your carrier is in the front, is the front for a hate group, and particularly this statement from Charlie Kirk, whatever it was in the past that the ADL says as a hate group, that dons a mask, a regular religious mask to justify stoking hatred of the left's enemies. I believe the First Amendment and free speech as a principle, regardless of what the law says. I don't want to ban anyone's speech, but the ADL has no place extorting ex-Twitter or any other social media. Moving over into the Anti-Defamation League is not what it seems. In a 2019 article, you might want to read it through, and we can go through, and somebody writes, and very well it seems, to identify what the ADL, it's a front for hate speech, it's a mission of the Zionists to spread the word of Zionism, essentially, and call everything you do to contrary that as anti-Semitic and worse. These are the people. What if T-Mobile is the face for an ADL? Again, the sentiment comes out real quick. You can come out and make the comment. I don't think this will be sufficient, but at least it gets the word out, and maybe we start scrutinizing it. Ban the ADL was trending at the time on the X, and bringing up the people who are hate speakers are the ones that are your judges, the judge, jury, and executioner relative to what your speech, which is supposed to be free, is going to include. And we are seeing the evidence today. I think it's not hard to see where we need to start going, but if you remain silent, you will be silent really forever. Your silence is their license to silence you completely. I hope you don't agree with that, and I hope you've understood here the connections I'm making. Maybe it sounds a little disconnected, but it's not. You can see right on through all these things that we have forces in effect of people that believe that they're in control. They take on the status of expert, and all of a sudden they are. And people don't really question it, or they don't question it right. And that's a difficult thing for people to understand. They may know some stuff, but they may not know how to apply the things that they know, which is a critique I have to make for most everybody, and why it's so difficult to try and get everybody together. And I hope that stops being a problem. I hope we start becoming more principally oriented and action oriented within that principle, and we start outing these people that are clowns and colorable, the color of principle, but not the substance of it. I hope something I said opens your eyes, gets you to think a little bit, reanalyze some stuff, analyze some new stuff, find something that interests you, most importantly, and go for that. Stay on that narrow path for you that's much more efficient than all the stuff I need to cover, just to try and get everyone to think about things. I'm just hitting a lot of stuff. And I'll be with you next week, Tech Tips for Nature Willing.
That's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
open up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.